The next poem was written after reading a magazine article on an airplane about a machine that you could buy. It's about $2,400. I'm sure it's $1,500 now, and next year it'll be $750. Putting it all within range, some of us in the room, and then $75 for the rest of us. And the machine is a machine that has goggles and a headset and hand and arm attachments such that if you put all of this on, you are in a virtual reality. You can, for example, go on an African safari by simply getting into the three-dimensional world of these. Has anyone heard of these things? You know, they're pretty. Oh, you have them even, maybe. Anyway, hope not. Maybe it's fun. I don't know. It scared me. And anyway, this is about other worlds that are created, virtual worlds that are created. Only, unlike a movie set, you may not be able to get out of this one. You get so far in. This is a long piece, but I'm only going to read small pieces from it. It's called God from a Machine. You put your hands on her waist, but you are in another world. The world is small, and you see it arranged in simple angles and diagonals, in heights and lines, steeples and domes. Space isn't foreshortened or compromised in any way except the whole, entirely reproduced with the knowledge that it is a suggestive world. Out on these newly cleansed avenues, glossy windows like magazine covers, gentle folk glide on course like soldiers. And we enter with a view of these broad Hitlerian promenades and a great hall of the Reich rising to a quarter of a kilometer. The dome itself could fit St. Peter's into it 16 times. On certain days, its top is lost in low homogeneous clouds. This architecture is central to our conception of ourselves in simple geometries, grossly amplified, reduced to a view. Nothing could be more computable. Take the scene where you move up the Avenue of Victory and go into your hotel to make love. Our computer, with a simple algorithm, will hold a mathematical model of the vast thoroughfares while you figure out how much we see of the splendid granites and the leafless chestnut trees through your eyes, the windows of our tour bus. Once through the symmetrical lobby and into the hotel, the rendering becomes more difficult, the more decorative the balustrades and velvet folds of light-resistant curtains become. The more raised the ticklish pattern on the bedspread, the more billowy a shower curtain, the more tiered the tinkling lighting. Most difficult of all to conceive, to engineer, the miniature man and woman carved of chocolate who sleep on a silver tray beside your bed. All accoutrements, personal and institutional, profoundly affect seduction, as you well know. Hearing her, you contrive a darkness with a mere touch of the switch, erasing any further doubt about appearances, erasing all visual distinction between virtual and real. And it happens, that is, you sense she's near. She joins you from her orderly world into your hybrid adopted culture. But as soon as you embrace her waist, this scenic rendezvous resumes on her terms. Her spongy flesh, her doughy, lumpy, plush, mossy, rural scene, hairy, spiny, calcic, enameled, and pitted. Now you feel your way, unsure in the messy darkness you trip over, breaking a glass, nearly certain she's left the last of her lipstick on you. You swipe your face with the back of your hand. Maybe it's better to see for yourself in the world you've created, better in the virtual light of your invention. So, like a god from a machine, you wrestle to that light. Probably she doesn't love you, and she certainly doesn't stop there, at the borders of what you conceive as the affair. She raises the curtains on the vistas below, and you have to watch yourself on any island she cares to point out, passing a spark of divinity with her ordinary finger, able, it seems, to move through glass, through the grid so carefully designed by you, every flicker reflecting appropriately in the eyes of your beloved, in mirrors, and off the marble pillars of your perspective. All of this sounds familiar. You remember promising to advance, to love better, to attend to matters. You always had to be reminded, but then failed. There it is, an emotional, physical thing, like being spooked in some amusement park on a sticky summer afternoon with a few strangers, or jammed into some inner night without end, lights and smoke and fires, a subway car of sweating bodies. Now you gaze upon the threshold of the past and that other infinitely reassuring world of total recall and correction. Memory and desire on the one hand, and electronic retrieval and fulfillment on the other. Life or an afterlife of functions and rewards. Many painful versions or one enhanced permanent vision. A past you're responsible for, no matter how you figure it, or a present you can trust. There's hardly a choice. In fact, it's made for you. You watch it like television or a movie. You have become comfortable. The world is beautiful. You're virtually alone. You turn your back on the beepings in the jungle, the walled cities and the dreary seas. How serene. The curve of the earth is palpable. You lie flat. You stand tall. You know yourself and your place in the universe. Lost days seem to you now retrieved, the broad-brimmed hat of your youth, and those loud songs and those apartments at the end of the century, white couches, patterned rugs. Visible, too, the vast greens of yesterday as they swelled into the wall-to-wall future. These dreams return fully. You regard them now with a greater eye. Walks through the park under the heavy boughs, into the tiny restaurant where you could see the stuffed fish and ribbons of food prepared. And you're not dead, not dying. You're in a false and steady state, unafraid. Now you can really laugh at the day you interviewed poorly and cry over the grave of a friend. Now you can feel the rain, raining everywhere, wherever it seems right, and take the heat and swim to shore powerfully. Now you can eat ravenously, sleep like a baby, and make love with your whole body.